So today, as previously announced, I thought we can discuss the subject of the seer and the seen. This is a reading, an excerpt from this book, Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhav, compiled by Bhakti Vikas Swami. It's based on it's a biography and a selection of his important teachings. So, I thought today we would take this opportunity to discuss some of the lessons imparted by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur Prabhupada. And I thought it's also important for us to know as to what his teachings were directly also. I mean, through Prabhupada's books it's always there, but also the kind of the phraseology, the words, the titles that he used for his articles, the time period during which he composed those articles, it would kind of give you a glimpse of the audience, the nature of audience that he was facing, the kind of opposition that he was facing, and also how he came up with a response in phrasing his presentation, in his presentation of Krishna consciousness. So this is a particular theme which is titled as The Seer and the Seen, also known as the Drigdrishya Vichar, which was sent in the mail. Excuse me, I have a bad sore throat. So this is very a central point to the culture of devotional service. And knowingly or unknowingly, we do live by it, and sometimes knowingly or unknowingly we violate it also. So it's always educating to know exactly what is our position and what is our role and responsibility and duty, and constitutionally what are we, how do we conduct ourselves in relation to Krishna. So it's a short essay, so I thought I would read most of the contents as is from the book itself. So it starts off as Drishta, the seer, and Drishya, the seen. Are we Drishta or Drishya? Is a question asked by Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada. Whatever I have to say, my whole message is based on proper comprehension of this truth. But how few people have really understood this Drigdrishya Vichar? And this he spoke towards the end of his present pastimes. So we have to take it with some amount of caution, that it is really important, and one cannot assume that, oh, I've been practicing, so I already know what this frame of devotional service is about. So the topic of Drishta and Drishya is discussed in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and other Shastras. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati clarified and stressed the point perhaps more than any previous Acharya. So this is from a quote from his writings. A bhogi, one who attempts to enjoy this world, considers himself Drishta, and everything else, including the Supreme Lord, to be Drishya, his object of vision, and that the process of vision is darshan. Due to their bitter experience of this world, so-called renouncers wish to deny the plurality of Drishta, Drishya, and Darshan, and thus regard them as one. Only devotees have the proper vision to appreciate that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and alone is fully independent and no one's servant. But being Drishta should be served by all, meaning Krishna is the Drishta. For the jivas and all else that are Drishya, are objects of his darshan. So the constitutional position of living entity is to serve Krishna. Phrase it differently, Krishna is the Drishta, we are the Drishya, and the process of serving is darshan. So Srila Saraswati Thakur often expounded Golok Darshan, spiritual vision, versus Jagat Darshan, worldly vision. By Golok Darshan, Krishna is perceived as the center of existence and everything in this world as paraphernalia for serving him. That is Golok Darshan. By Jagat Darshan, the Jiva considers himself the center of existence and views everything, even the Godhead, as paraphernalia for his personal sense enjoyment. By Golok Darshan, one sees and lives in the spiritual realm even while present in the mundane sphere. What follows is another excerpt from one of his writings. He who sees an object is called the seer, and an object seen by the observer is called the seen. The instrument of seeing is called sight. It is a common error to deem the sense of sight the actual seer. Whatever we can measure by any of our senses, we also call a seeable object, and he who senses it is called the seer. Are you following so far? It is best that the Jiva see himself as the object of Krishna's enjoyment, which is also known as the constitutional position of the living entity. But thinking himself the enjoyer under the influence of false ego will result only in his misfortune. It is not fitting that the Jiva see the world as the object of his own enjoyment. Rejecting that outlook and instead seeing the world as the object of the Lord's enjoyment, seeing it as Krishna's world or Gokul, is the Jiva's good fortune and satisfies Krishna's senses. I am not the seer, but rather am seen by Krishna. I am not the enjoyer, but the object of enjoyment for Krishna. So, this precise and unequivocal ascertainment of the position of the Jiva and stressing this point as the essential foundation of bhakti was the unique contribution that Srila Saraswati Thakur tried to inculcate in his disciples and the general public. So this trilogy of Drig, Drishta and Darshan is, later on we will come to see, is also called as the Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan. Being divisive and certainly unpalatable to committed worldly sense enjoyers and advocates of a plurality of viewpoints, this ontological teaching gave definition to the Gaudiya Math as being not simply another religious organization, nor one characterized merely by high moral standards, but as philosophically distinct from other religious paths and even from other Vaishnava sampradayas and Gaudiya subsects, and from Gaudiyas and others who quoted Shastra but had not grasped the essential point by which Shastra is to be accepted. So this was the distinguishing factor between the pseudo organizations who don't recognize Krishna as the ultimate beneficiary of all activities. Bhaktaram Yagya Tapasam. Similarly, so because of this, he also had to face a lot of opposition. Not him personally, anyone who was not willing to give up the understanding that they are not the enjoyer. Because that's so ingrained in our existence that we, even though we are doing devotional service apparently, we still haven't given up this concept of who the doer is. We are still thinking we are in charge of, like we do this service and we'll get this result. But actually, awarding results is not in our jurisdiction, right? What is in our jurisdiction? Any quote from Bhagavad Gita? Could you quote the verse, please? Is it
कर्मण्य एवाधिकारस्ते मा फलेषु कदाचन मा कर्मफल हेतुर्भु मा ते संगोस्तु अकर्मणि.
या
यू हैव अ राइट टू परफॉर्म योर प्रेस्क्राइब ड्यूटी बट यू आर नॉट एंटाइटल्ड टू द फ्रूट्स ऑफ एक्शन. नेवर कंसिडर योर सेल्फ द कॉज ऑफ द रिजल्ट ऑफ योर एक्टिविटीज एंड नेवर बी अटैच्ड टू नॉट डूइंग योर ड्यूटी.
या सो इट इज one of the famous verses quoted, right, in regards to what is our jurisdiction, where does our jurisdiction end and where does, you know, what lies beyond it. So this is a very seminal point for us to understand that even while conducting or acting, enacting devotional services, if we don't realize this point that actually we are conducting for the pleasure of Krishna, I mean, it's not an neophyte realization. It's really an advanced stage of understanding to get that it's our duty to serve Krishna, right? That's what the meaning of the word constitution means, right? That our enjoyment lies in the satisfaction of Krishna. That's what constitutional conveys, right? It's not unconstitutional. That's our nature. But overlooking that, we conduct ourselves thinking that we are the master, right? So not that it's not known, but it's so subtle that we sometimes overlook it ourselves despite being aware of it. That's why I thought we should look at the words of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur Prabhupada and see how he has dealt with this topic and how much importance he has given to this. So continuing the reading. Whether or not their position has strength, all have the right to speak and make personal judgments, but giving up oneness to different angles of vision in debate, everyone should instead come toward the truth and see things as they really are. Drishya, Darshan and Drishta, Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana. All these subjects should be considered. These topics could not be exhausted even after talking on them day and night for 5 or 10 days. In his responses to some of the press responses to the articles of the Gaudiya and the Harmonist and Nadia Prakash and all those things, there used to be people in those days around 1930s, 1940s who would write back saying, oh, this is some false claim and this and that. And there used to be so much confusion about that practically Vaishnavism was considered as a practice undertaken by untouchables. It degraded so badly in just 450 years that it had lost all its repute, and to instill the repute and the pristine purity of devotional service again was the task undertaken by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. So these words especially are very, very strongly framed, and the phraseology is very precise, so we may not be used to it, but the idea is that forgetting this concept is what everything else is going on outside in the world, right? All their individual efforts of trying to make it better in this world through research and through so many other endeavors, through even social political adjustments, they never really depend on Krishna, right? That's the missing point, without which the actual fruit of the activity is not awarded. So devotees also are engaged in studying of the scriptures and all, but with the mentality of pleasing Krishna, or with the mentality of bettering the service, with getting a finer understanding so that they can execute the service better. With that motive, if you study the scriptures, yes, it's more, the more the merrier. But if you study with the point of, oh, what is there? Why do I need to surrender to anyone? I can just approach the scripture on my own. That will lead to an incorrect conclusion, as we'll see later on in this essay. So this Drig Drishya Vichar was particularly a rebuttal to the Mayavadi theory of Triputi Vinash, which proposes that spiritual perfection lies in the Vinash of the Triputi, the three factors, namely Jnana, Gyaya and Gyata. Jnana is knowledge, Gyaya is the object of knowledge, and Gyata is the knower. So they would, with all merging into oneness. So this term Triputi Vinash is taken from certain writings of the Sri Sampradaya, in which Ramanujacharya would use this as a stepping stone in founding his Sri Bhashya. These divisions parallel Drishya, Darshan and Drishta, which Mayavadis also intend to amalgamate. Yet Vaishnava Acharyas had demonstrated that such homogenization being impossible, the goal of Mayavadis was even more illusory than their conception of the hypothetically illusory world that they attempted to escape. And the much-touted Mayavad was thus an elaborate logical fallacy. Meaning, understanding this as a living entity's position as a servant of Krishna, one can surpass all the misconceptions about one's own existence. So, the practical application of Drik Drishya Vichar was brought out in Srila Saraswati Thakur's comments on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antyalila, chapter 20, verse 52. So he says, a devotee does not care about his own happiness and distress. He is interested only in seeing that Krishna is happy, and for that purpose he undertakes various activities. A pure devotee has no way of sensing pleasure except by seeing that Krishna is satisfied in every respect. If Krishna becomes happy by giving him distress, such a devotee accepts that distress as the greatest pleasure. Something similar to the last questions discussed in the Bhakti Shastri, right? Is that similar to? But Ramananda Sakha Prabhu was asking some questions on that. Was he? Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was himself the exemplar of this ideal, incessantly serving Krishna without desiring anything in return and disregarding whether whatever could have been construed as his own physical or mental happiness. Those who are materialistic, who are very proud of worldly wealth and have no spiritual knowledge, consider their own happiness the aim of life, as do the Prakrit Sahajiyas. Some aspire to enjoy themselves by sharing the happiness of Krishna. This is the mentality of fruitive workers who want to enjoy sense gratification by making a show of devotional service to Krishna. So this mentality also applies to people living in the dhams, thinking that they are living in the dhams and that they have approached a spiritual master, they have adjudged a person to be fit for their accepting initiation, and it's they who have surrendered, and it's they who have bought a ticket, gone to Navadvip or Mayapur and Vrindavan, stayed there, and they are the people who have tested by asking questions and judging whether a person is fit to be the spiritual master. So it's their reliance on their own faculties. So although the activities are that, yes, you are going to the spiritual place, you are approaching a person for receiving a knowledge, but that concept is still there that I am doing it. Is it not? So it's so tricky that it's under the skin always, and you seem to get rid of that disease, that actually you are not responsible for the fruits of the actions, right? The one we just read, the Bhagavad Gita verse. But we really have to understand what our real duty as a student is. Unless we figure that out, we are not going to succeed in any of the endeavors, right? So sometimes people ask, how does one approach a spiritual master? With the impression that it's something that it's their responsibility to go and judge a person and decide whether they are fit enough to be their spiritual master or not. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati answers that question that we are not even capable of seeing the spiritual person. It will come later in this Drik Drishya Vichar itself, that it's really when the living entity becomes inquisitive to know about Krishna. And Krishna from within the heart, he can sense that, okay, this living entity wants to know about me, he wants to come close to me. So I will arrange for him to meet with a person who can give more knowledge about me. And that person is the spiritual master. So the prerequisite here is that there has to be such a level of, so to say, a desperateness. But desperateness is not the right word, but such amount of eagerness to really know and come close to Krishna, right? Then Krishna will arrange. So when one becomes so eager, then things fall in line. Not that we are not eager, but somebody has told us that, okay, we have to accept spiritual master as the next stage to make progress. Okay, let's make progress, go to the next stage on our own, and we'll find a spiritual master. So we are the doer in that case, and we are expecting that, okay, I've done, I'm responsible for my own self, and I've found my spiritual master, and I'm all set, I'm going ahead. That's not correct, right? As per this Dirgdisha Vichar, we have to really surrender, and Krishna will direct our endeavors in a way that bears fruit, which will bring us closer to Him. So he would say that, to the many who came to Srila Saraswati Thakur with the premature and immature hope that he would show them God, he would reply, don't try to see God, but try to act in such a way that he will want to see you. This is a very famous statement. But the foundation, the philosophical foundation of this statement is coming from this Dirgdisha Vichar, that are we really capable of going and seeing any other person? No, right? Even mundane level, we can't really know another person on our own self unless that person reveals what his inner mind, what his inner motives are. So much more is true for Krishna then, right? So it's his conversation, it's his instruction. He really knows what he means by it. Not that we can decipher it by taking a dictionary and sitting with the Sanskrit dictionary and trying to figure out what these words, combination words mean, and speculating on what you might have meant. That's a speculative approach. Although the content is Bhagavad Gita, but the approach is still speculative, which will lead to incorrect understanding. So, he says, one who asks a guru to show him Bhagwan can never really be attracted to the sweetness of Krishna's flute from which all Vani emanates. But those who genuinely want to serve the form of Godhead request a guru. This is what they request to the guru, saying, by your instruction, please correct and purify me and give me eyes by which I may actually see. Godhead must be seen first through the ears, first Vani, then Vapu. The ears prepare the eyes. This is in line with the 9th chapter, where Krishna says that when the living entity is purified, then he can directly experience Krishna. Pratyakshavagamam dharmam susukam kartum avyayam. But to come to that stage, one has to go through a cleansing process. And that will involve some bitter treatment that we may not like, but it's necessary. And so, really, the reason why we don't focus on this is because we have an inbuilt fear that, oh, I may have to confess some of the things which I don't really want to confess and which may lead to a lot of embarrassment. Better I just ignore them. That's a mentality that people have sometimes. And everyone, including myself. So that's the hindrance, that we are still holding on to it, saying, okay, we will somehow make it, we'll get both. We'll progress spiritually also, and we'll not lose out on the material part also. That's the ultimate goal that we have, right? That let's make this adjustment so that we'll conduct the devotional service properly and also not lose on this. And until that is there, we really are not going to make any progress, because Krishna is trying to take it away and we are holding on to it. And we are thinking, oh, no, it's needed for us, it's good for us, we are using it for Krishna service and all, but it's really our mind that's dictating the terms that we really haven't surrendered, right? Somebody can ask, did you accept initiation? Yeah, I took it from so-and-so Swamiji and all. Really, did you take it from so-and-so Swamiji, or your mind told you to go and take from so-and-so Swamiji, so you just followed it? Really, that person is a disciple of his mind. It's not of the spiritual master. When one is thinking that I am the person who is going to judge and figure out who my spiritual master is and how to make progress. So does that mean that we stop asking question, can you show me God? No, right? So he would say, so Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did not deny the importance of the quest to see God. Rather, he underscored its importance, stating that to behold the beauty of Sri Radha Krishna's toenails is the only proper utility of the eyes. Yet he stressed that the only possible means to achieve such darshan is by developing a service attitude, which itself is tantamount to seeing God. So this is an excerpt from one of his writings. It is necessary to seek the sight of Krishna. That should be our first and only endeavor. Our souls can have no real function till we are face to face with the divinity. Sri Krishna shows himself to those who prefer his service to any other occupation. Seeing Bhagwan means total engagement of the senses in his service. In other words, serving the Lord 24 hours a day with all one's senses means being established in one's primal occupational position, constitutional position, in which one naturally sees Bhagwan. By the Guru's mercy and strength gained from personal bhajan, one becomes fully aware of Krishna's manifestation both internally and externally. This is seeing Bhagwan. That without developing this service attitude, we can't really... Whatever we see, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls it as, we go to spiritual places without proper understanding and... Okay, you can start off with no understanding, but there has to be an inclination to understand more and learn more, right? If you procrastinate that and say, oh, let me go to this temple, that temple, and this place, and that place, and I heard the prasadam is good, I heard the aarti is good there, and this and that, let me go and do that. That's just an eye exercise. That's what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati calls. That you're just going to exercise your eye. How what are you seeing there? And so this is a very important statement, that it's not that we are going to spiritual places and seeing and taking the darshan of Lord, right? Darshan meaning when the Lord reveals to us, right? Any verse in Bhagavad Gita says that I reserve the right to reveal myself to the living entities. Okay, all the Bhakti Shastri students. Yes. Can you quote the verse?
Naham prakashya sarvasya yogamaya samavrta mudoyam nabijanati lokoma majam avyayam. So I am not manifest to the naham prakasha sarvasya, everyone. Yogamaya samavruta, I am covered by the curtain of yogamaya. Mudoyam nabi janati. So the mudas, who are fools, they don't know who I am. Mamebhya paramavyayam. I am the...
they don't know me as the imperishable.
They don't know me as the inexhaustible and the supreme.
Yes.
My true nature.
Yeah. So that is his prerogative, right? To whom he reveals. Right? So we can't really exchange that I have done this much of service, which means I have accrued so much of credit. So I can buy now that, okay, you have to reveal about so much, 20% download done. You can't do that. You can't do that. That is called as Padma Niti by Srila Saraswati Thakur. Padma is Kamsa's mother. So Kamsa's mother had this conception that for tending cows, Nanda Maharaj used to give Krishna little butter and little yogurt and little rice and this thing. So if we give Nanda all that amount of butter and yogurt and all that he spent on Krishna, he will give Krishna to us. That was what Padma's thought was. So that's the mentality of purchasing. You know, the independent arrogance of the living entity that, okay, I've done this much, so I deserve so much. I can't be forced with so many difficulties. Oh, what is this? I'm doing devotional service and Krishna is just giving me troubles. Something is wrong in the accounting. We can't say that. So the reason, so you can see that this conception, this drigdrisha vichar, it has so many far-reaching implications in every of our activity. That without actually understanding that it is the center of this center has to be Krishna. That's what this every teaching of every scripture is aimed towards, right? So, but we tend to forget, overlocate, or even sometimes plainly override it under the influence of the modes. So we really have to call it out, saying, okay, yes, I did a mistake. I need to improve the next time I come across such a situation. So we have to be honest to admit that, yes, we haven't really understood this and the implications, the far-reaching implications of not understanding our identity as a servant of Krishna. And then that true surrender will come. Okay, how do you come to that position of surrender to Krishna? Oh, Krishna, I want to make progress, but I can't seem to give up this misunderstanding that it's not for me, it's for you. Right? And then Krishna helps. He arranges circumstances in a way that we are more easily approached to that conclusion of seeing Krishna as the center of our activities. So we have to really surrender and come in, and that will happen as and when there is a sincere desire to on the part of the living entity. Right now we really are not that sincere. I'm speaking for myself. So I really, if somebody comes and says, give up whatever you're doing and just do what I say and you will get what you want, assuming that somebody will come and tell me that, okay, you know, stop whatever activities you're doing so that you can spare time to do so and so activities, which is what is really recommended for you. I don't think I'm in a position to make that like switch on or switch off at such a short notice, right? Whatever is holding us back is what is our things that we are not honest about in admitting. And so it comes out as you know, covered devotional service and so many other malformed manifestations that it blocks our progress. And so then the question comes, oh, I've been doing devotional service so many years and this and that, and but I really don't, I'm not feeling the connection. So that's because we haven't really surrendered and we haven't really taken note of the point that it's not us, it's about Krishna. And we are not to be judging our own progress also. Right? If you write an exam, do you give yourself the marks for that? You leave that to the teacher, right? So similarly, in devotional service also, we have to really follow that karmanyamadhikaraste. That is meant for devotional service, not for our office jobs. It's, of course, it's meant for every activity, but more so for devotional service. That we do the devotional service and correspondingly Krishna will reciprocate in trying to drive away our ignorance and facilitate us with, which will enable us to come to a higher level of understanding our existence in relationship with Krishna. So in a lecture given on the 10th of November 1936 in Puri, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati emphasized the type of faith required to approach the Supreme Lord. I see the statue. Okay? This kind of thinking is in the spirit of enjoyment. Whereas the deity sees me, my uncovered pure self is deity darshan. So when we are going to take darshan, people ask, did you see the deity? Kya darshan hua kya? So that is not the right way of approaching higher personality or any other person. They have to reveal who they are. It's not, can you go and knock on a person's door and then come back and claim that I've seen that person? Do we know that person? Do we know the mind of that person, the intention, the motive? Nothing. How can we see? What have we seen? It's just an eye exercise. So, if in the same way that I see a movie, drama, or gymnastic display, or hear a song, I think I see the deity with my eyes and fathom him by my intelligence, such an attempt will be on the material platform. So, next time when we go in front of the deities, we have to go with the motive that, Krishna, please glance upon me and drive away my ignorance so that I may be able to serve you better, rather than us trying to figure out, oh, how is the necklace, how is the garland, how is the decoration, how is the dress and all those things, and try to judge and then say, oh, you notice that, oh, you're so advanced, oh, you notice this, you're so advanced. That is not the way to take darshan of deity. So, One will derive no benefit from such inclination not meant for satisfying the Lord's senses. Faith in the Lord entails not having faith in mundane enjoyment or renunciation. If one has faith in this world, then that is bhoga, enjoyment. The object of the world are for my enjoyment. Such a mentality is due to not having initiation and spiritual knowledge. So the mark of a person who is initiated with spiritual knowledge is that he stops having this understanding, regardless of external formalities that have been completed or not. So there is an anecdote that once in the Sri Chaitanya Math in Navadvip, Srila Saraswati Thakur was standing at the doorway of the inner sanctum, looking towards the deities of Sri Guru Gauranga Gandharvika Giridhari. He was standing there away. And since Srila Saraswati Thakur was not wearing his spectacles, an accompanying disciple suggested that perhaps he was unable to properly see the deities. Okay. So, Srila Saraswati Thakur responded that we should not think of the Supreme Lord as an object of our vision. This is a very mild tone that he would have adopted. Instead, we should meditate on how we can acquire some qualification to become worthy objects of his vision. The same statement that he said before, that don't try to see God, but try to act in such a way that he will want to see you. Same thing repeated here, that we should consider whether he wants to see us and reveal himself to us. That's the mood of a devotee. So, following the example of Lord Chaitanya, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati took darshan of Jagannath in Puri from a distance from behind the Garuda Stambha at the entrance of the temple. Okay, he explained that we will stand behind our guru, Garuda. Jagannath will look at Garuda because Garuda is his devotee. Then he will also cast his merciful glance upon us. After once taking darshan in this way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati expounded that Jagannath is not Drishya but Drishta. Only when a jiva is wholly free from the conception of himself being Drishta, and when he is fully situated in the understanding of himself as Drishya of Jagannath, and to be enjoyed by him, then only can the jiva remain sevonmukh and with eyes of love actually have darshan of Jagannath. As long as we think, I shall see Jagannath, then we shall not see him, but only wood, stone, an object described in Buddhist literature or an antique handless statue that is an object of our enjoyment. Eyes of flesh can never chalk out the Sachidananda Vigraha. Only persons who realize themselves as Drishya, whose eyes see by hearing from Shastra or by chanting the holy names, may have darshan of the Sachidananda reality that we see through our ears. So unless we learn how to see, we can't really see. Right? So on another occasion, one who sees must do so with bhakti. A pure devotee is servant of Bhagwan, and non-devotees are those with extraneous desires. Karmis, jnanis, yogis, and the rest. Jnana karma dhyanavrittam anya bilashita shunyamte. If in the mood of an enjoyer we go to see Jagannath, regarding him as an object of our enjoyment, then we will simply see a maimed wooden doll and return. Some will say Jagannath is armless Ram, a wooden doll. Others consider him a wooden mannequin with spirit inside. So offensive. So really, when we approach the spiritual places, the dhams, or even devotees, we should really focus on this prayer within our heart that please give us qualifications so that we may become worthy of your vision. That's the mentality that is being stressed in this article. And this is really the essence of bhakti, because we are not the enjoyer and we are not seeing for our enjoyment, right? We are being seen for his enjoyment. So, and similarly, this is applicable even for pure devotees. also when they desire, they will bestow the knowledge on this disciple. Not that the disciple can go and claim that, okay, I've served you for 20 days continuously, now you have to give me first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. That's not happening, right? So, the most famous verse of this Shvetashvatara Upanishad, Yasya Deve Para Bhaktir, Yatha Deve Tatha Guru, Tasyaite Katita Hiyata Prakashante Mahatmana, that those who have implicit faith in the Lord and the spiritual master are all the purports of the Vedas revealed to him. So it's their right, it's their property for them to give to us. We can't claim that, we can't, you know, demand that I need that, you have to give it to me because I've done so and so. So thing that doesn't work, that doesn't apply here. So then what is in our control then? Can we do anything? Should we do anything? Should we endeavor for anything? If everything is in their control and they are the it's their jurisdiction, then what's left for us? That's not our call, right? Yes.
It goes back to that verse 247.
Yes.
Is performed in the
duty. Yes.
Expect any outcome.
Yes. So that really should be our so to say tattooed on our spiritual body, that we, it's our only thing in our as a constitution. That's what we get, that to act, to serve. That's what the word constitution also conveys. It's not an imposed responsibility. It's the intrinsic responsibility. Our intrinsic activity is to serve. So similarly, when somebody will come and say to a spiritual, that I will accept you as my spiritual master only, can you show me God? Some people ask, can you show me God? So there is an anecdote that happened, and it's very nicely captured here, that one person came to Srila Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada and said, can you show me God? So what do you think would be the response for Srila Saraswati Thakur? So his response is very dignified, and he says, well, what's the use if I say yes or no? How does it matter? Unless you know how to see God, how is it going to make a difference of whether I saw God or not? Right? Just like if a teacher gives an assignment and the students among themselves are discussing, did you solve it? Does it make a difference if the other person solved or not? Unless you solved it, everything is dependent on whether you solved it or not, right? Similarly, we should... precisely the point which you said, it doesn't make a difference. So
if he knows how to solve it, he can teach me how to solve it.
Agreed, but the question to ask is not that did you solve or not.
Okay, that's...
So, have you seen Bhagwan? Srila Saraswati Thakur retorted. So what is the use if I say I have or I haven't seen? Okay. As long as you do not know how to see God, any statement about seeing Him cannot benefit you. You must learn how to see God. Otherwise, anyone can tell you that he has seen the Supreme Lord and you will be hoodwinked. So if at all you have to ask the question, you have to ask, how can I see God? Or what can I do so that I can behold the Lord's Vigraha, Sachidananda Vigraha? It's clearly said that the eyes of flesh cannot carve out this Sachidananda Vigraha. So are we hopeless then in that case? No. We have to go through the cleansing process. So again that person asked, but have you seen God? He was a zamindar, by the way. But have you seen God? Have you seen Him? But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati stuck to the point. Without knowing who is the Supreme and the authorized process for seeing Him, any such declaration, I have seen God, will only serve to deceive you. Okay. Pursuant to this point, he once explained that without lacerating all kudarshana, wrong philosophies, by sudarshana, correct philosophy, no one can attain Bhagavad Darshana, audience of Bhagavan. That we have to really give up this wrong position. We have to... They're asking us to quit our job as the enjoyer now. So you're getting laid off. And you're getting employed as a servant of God. Is that good or bad? Shortly after disclosing Gayatri mantras to some disciples from within his room, Srila Saraswati Thakur overheard them conferring about the meaning of the Kama Gayatri, okay? Discussing with alacrity the possibility of throwing flowers on Krishna's body. Some devotees got initiated into the Gayatri mantra and they were just got out of the room and they started discussing what the meaning of this mantra is, the confirmation means this, that and all those things. And Srila Sridhar Maharaj just entered Srila Saraswati Thakur's room at that time. And he saw that Srila Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada was very morose. And he said that, oh, these new people, they are trying to understand that they are how to figure out a way to throw flower on Krishna. But I haven't been, for millions of years, I'm trying, but I haven't been able to do it. And these greenhorns, they just arrived and they just got this mantra and they are discussing about how to throw flower on Krishna. This is happening even though it's obvious that Srila Saraswati Thakur would have stressed on this point in his lectures, in his conversation, in his articles, everywhere. Despite that, people tend to make this mistake. That's how important this is and that's how, you know, careless we are. So we often forget that it's really for Krishna. It's not by the people, for the people, of the people. It's one day while Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was lecturing, the deity's aarti began and some listeners left to attend it. Okay, while the lecture was going on, he commented, they are simply going for eye exercises. Thereby indicating that the Lord cannot truly be discerned by those who have not properly heard. Okay, and in Puri, he commented similarly to a disciple who, having gone for darshan of Jagannath, arrived at the end of his lecture. In the mud, a lecture in which he had expounded on the actual meaning of Jagannath Darshan. See what they missed. Okay. Then, as soon as this is in the Abhay Charan serial, also, if you look, there he is giving his talk in the Purushottam Jagannath Mutt in Puri, and he's talking about Jagannath Darshan, and the scene shows that two disciples come and sit at the very back of the lecture in the crowd, and that just, you know, sets off the fireworks. So he says, even now you are very late. Even now you are wandering here and there going to see Jagannath through these eyes. If you do not first attain spiritual knowledge through the ears, then going to see Jagannath will simply be curiosity mixed with personal sense gratification. It's not our check mark that, okay, yes, tick, 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 ho gaya. Jagannath Puri, yes, we saw. Mayapuri, yes, we saw. Vrindavan, yes, we saw. Srirangam, yes, we saw. Tick, 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 oh, all done. That's not the darshan that is being referred to here. So I'm not saying not to go to the temple to see Jagannath, but Jagannath will see. The pretense of darshan by a person lacking an objective is no darshan at all. See Jagannath as the object of service, different from the world of personal enjoyment. When you go to see Jagannath, do not just see the material world, but attain spiritual knowledge. That was what his recommendation would be. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati applied this Drik Drishya Vichar not only to Bhagwan, but also to pure devotees who constantly see him through eyes tinged with the salve of love. This is applicable even to the devotees of the Lord. One cannot claim that, oh yes, because I walked in the same beach where Prabhupada was doing his morning walk, so I really understand what Prabhupada was saying. Or I was in the same room, or I drank from the same tap that Prabhupada drank water, so I really know what he means. That's not the point. And there have been instances where people claim like that. Physical proximity to a famous person, they claim to encash it as their way to get respect and all. But we should be discerning enough to see how close they are to the vani of the spiritual master, not the Bapu. So he says, same thing is for prasad also. For devotees, for prasad. So everything about the Lord is that we are to be enjoyed. So when we are honoring, why do we say honoring prasad, not tasting prasad and eating prasad and We say honoring prasad, right? So, he says, so there was once an incident where at some festival in Calcutta, a pandit, like a regular pandit who would perform sacrifices and all, he came to the mat and he was known for his, you know, sweet tooth. Sweet tooth, meaning his tendency to eat good food and his appreciation for good food and all. So, a devotee once cautioned him, saying, "Oh, you are a pandit, just think whether you are eating the prasad or prasad is eating you." Okay. So, then he got very annoyed and saying, "What do you mean? I come here just to take prasadam? Or it's like that I am very, it's not that I have any dearth of good food. I have access to very good food. Don't think that I am here just begging for good food," and all. He walked away. And when he goes back, he writes a letter saying, "I came to the mat, but I was insulted in so and so manner, and I was..." That when the devotee asked me that, consider whether the prasadam is eating me or I am eating the prasad, okay? Malpua in this particular case. So to that, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati responded saying, how many amongst us, he was speaking to his, in his katha, to his matvasis, saying, somebody has sent this letter. See this letter, an angry letter, okay? And he asked the same question that one of the devotees asked this pandit. How many amongst us are really understanding the purport of this question? It's an honest thing to admit that, okay, yes, we really don't understand what it means. So, maybe a handful, he says. So then a reply was sent to that pandit saying, it is not fitting that we eat the prasad of the Lord. That is, that we measure it. Okay? If the prasad enjoys us, eats us, makes us its own, then we will conquer over matter and that will be to our benefit. The meaning of prasad is favor or mercy. The remnants of Vaishnava's prasad are called Mahamaha prasad. The Bhagavatam states, simply by decorating ourselves with the garlands, fragrant oils, clothes and ornaments that you have already enjoyed, and by eating the remnants of your meals, we, your servants, will conquer your illusory energy. That's the potency of prasad. Prasade sarva dukkhanam hanirasya pujayate. One should consider oneself the object of vision or enjoyment for the prasad of the Lord or his devotee. To think oneself the seer and enjoyer will cause one to enter deeper within the kingdom of Maya. Brahmavan nirvikaram hi yatha Vishnu tathaiva tat. Vishnu prasad is as transcendental and free from degrading transformation as is Vishnu himself. So this brings us to the end of this essay. So we have gone through this drig drishya vichar. We identified what is drishya, who is drishta, who is drishya, what is darshan, what is drig. And we applied it in so many different contexts of approaching a spiritual place, a spiritual personality, a spiritual food. And everywhere we saw how a misunderstanding of this basic concept will result in just a fruitless, exercise for the material senses. Darshan is the process of seeing by the Lord. So, the Lord is Drishta, Jagannath. We are the Drishya, to be seen. And when the Lord glances, it's called Darshan, or Prasad, or Mercy. There is no grammatical correction also there. It's grammatically also wrong, philosophically wrong, everything is wrong. It's like, we say like that, but that's an incorrect use of... It communicates that we haven't really understood, right? That the use of that language indicates that we haven't understood who is the seer. When you wake up the deities in the morning, you pray to the Lord that, oh, please, glance and shower auspiciousness over this world. That's a morning prayer that we sing, that we pray to the Lord, saying, Uttisto Govinda, Uttisto Parameshwara, and all those things. And then you say, Shubhadrishti Pradanina Trailokya Mangalam Kuru, that you sanctify the three worlds by your glance. Not that we go and sprinkle Ganga water and show some Agarvati and purify the place. It's by the Lord's will that. So, this also falls in line with some of the discussions we recently had in the Bhagavad Gita, Wednesday and Saturday also. We were discussing about the 13th chapter, right? Just this Wednesday, we discussed about all the 19 items of knowledge that Krishna describes, beginning from Amanitva and Adambitva and simplicity and straightforwardness and, you know, inclination to live in a secluded place, free from material association, so that we may become more serious in our endeavors. So, there are two parts. The verse before it, Krishna says, Kshetra Kshetra Gyor Jnanam, that what is knowledge is this knowledge of the field, the knower of the field, and the... So, in the knower of the field, there are two, the living entity and the super soul. And he says, all these three things constitute knowledge. And then, this is verse 6 and 7, and then 8 to 12, he describes about all these qualities. So, if you look at it closely, this whole thing has been split into two parts. One is the object of knowledge, and one is the process of knowledge. Right? So, from our side, we have to stick to the process of knowledge. From Krishna's side, he will reveal the object of knowledge. Right? So, if you look at all this, we have to really make an effort to become humble and simple and prideless, and we have to change our motivations and desires and be educated so that we are making use of the facility given to us. But does that mean that anyone who is humble is necessarily just by declaring themselves as being humble, does that mean they would have attained knowledge? No. It, of course, it's a prerequisite, but it's not. We can't demand based on that. That's the complete opposite of humility, right? It's the first quality, and then we are doing completely opposite of that when we demand, saying, "Okay, yes, I've done this devotional service. Now I need this result." That's complete opposite of humility. So that is the outlook with which we have to conduct ourselves in devotional service. So I would like to. Open for any discussion, comments, feedback, questions.
So what would be the requirement in those qualities that are listed in chapter 13, 8 to 12 for that object of knowledge to be seen? Of course, it's up to Krishna, but you said one is humble, but that in itself is not sufficient. What more is needed?
No, I meant that those who claim to be humble can't know the knowledge. That's what I meant. Because humility is actually, let me find that, if I can find it. There is a definition of humility which I would like to share. Let me see. I don't think I'm able to find that right now. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati describes humility as total surrender to the cause of the Absolute Truth. Total surrender to the cause of Absolute Truth. That's what humility means. Not necessarily that we shower praises on other living entities and just doing lip service saying, "You are so great and I am so fallen." That's just an outward show. But the real foundation of humility comes from one's identification as a servant of Krishna. That's what humility is. Not that we are the enjoyer, but Krishna is the enjoyer. Change, the shift in consciousness is what is termed as humility. Not so much about what he says to others and all, but it's how he conducts himself, what is the understanding that's driving his actions.
So in that humility, some devotional service is involved.
Yes.
Yes. You'd have to say that. It's not humility alone. One is not just a humble person, but is also engaged in devotional service.
Yes. As I said, humble by itself, those who are not engaged in devotional service, they may say that I am humble to the extent that they are thinking that they are not causing any harm to other living entities and that they are not thinking high about themselves. But the point is that they are not thinking correct about themselves. Thinking correctly about oneself is what termed humility. The correctness is that they are the servant of Lord. That understanding is what generates humility. So without that understanding, one may seem humble, mannered, well-mannered and very gentle, but that's not called humility. That may be just called etiquette, but that's not humility. Got a question?
No, I just had this same comment. The moment you think that you are humble, you are not, because yeah. It's self-referential problem.
Yeah.
So basically, as you said, I have the same comment that are we really, to the subtle points which you mentioned, that are we really understanding that somebody else is the Dishta, Krishna is the Dishta, or we are crossing the line to subtly believe that, okay, I may be the Dishta.
Yeah.
In similar manner, are we really humble or acting in such a manner that we be recognized to be humble?
Yeah.
But in that case, we are not humble.
Yes.
So humility means it's kind of just getting yourself surrendered completely, because the moment you haven't surrendered, you will think that somebody else should recognize you, and
yes.
Then you are not.
That's true. It's about recognizing the living entity as a part and parcel of Krishna. That's what humility means.
Coming back to this darshan, then what is the use of, what is the purpose of being seen? In the sense, why do you even go in front of deity? Because that means you have you want to be seen. That is also a...
Yes, we want to be seen, but we have to act in such a way that we would be seen. We want to be seen, yes.
But then that's a desire, right? In a sense, that means you want to be seen.
No, it is not like a self-motivated desire. It is like, think of it like this. Like you're going in front of a superior and then showing your progress report and, you know, disclosing that this is what I've done, this is what I've plan to do, and I need your blessings, I seek your blessings. Like that, devotees have a prayer. So you can go to excuse me. So you go to be seen by Lord Jagannath and also offer a prayer to him. Not that we are seeing him, not with that mentality. We have to go, but with the right mentality. That's what. It's a transcendent, it's a Sachidananda Vigraha, right? But we have to really come to that understanding, and then it's an eventual gradual process.
So Prabhuji, when you say that we are doing something and we are showing him our progress, so it's a progress towards what? What is the goal? The goal is we are progressing so that Krishna would like to see us? Is that...
It is something like whatever you have been doing as a service. Whatever, like a progress report saying, okay, how have things gone so far? Like that. It's like you can confess to the Lord, you can confide in him, you can seek blessings, you can seek advice, you can ask favors. You can do all those things, but not with the desire to enjoy yourself. Right?
So is it wrong to admire the deities? I mean, we always say the deities are so beautiful. So is that wrong?
No comments.
The question was that is it wrong then to admire the deities? Is it an eye exercise? Or is it indulgence?
That they have the person has to answer for himself how advanced they are, and based on that. Generally, as my personal thing is that I don't indulge in such comments because.
I think brought the beautiful point that to admire deity, it is likely a spontaneous thought. You really don't need to analyze or examine too much to, you know, admire. Whenever you see something beautiful, it is a natural, spontaneous way
yes.
to admire that, hey, deity is beautiful. Just like Prabhupada one time mentioned on one occasion that the devotee failed to even see a sannyasi and fail to give a dandavat pranam, then he need to fast for a day. Means seeing means what is the next action you are performing. So that is, the, for example, if you are coming and seeing without even offering our obeisances and admiring, means the basic etiquette first you follow and then you see and you admire. All the thing, you know, it is coming in a way of deity worship. So I think the point is, darshan, definitely Krishna is seeing, but not necessarily all the time you are in that mood, rather than you are in a mood to see Krishna also, which is the, our object of love, yes, which you wanted to see.
Yes. He does say that I'm not saying not to go and see God, but so, he says.
Well, I think what Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is trying to prove on all the Siddhantas,
yes,
means your seeing of the Lord, your way of understanding is based on what Siddhanta you are. But this is actually our gradual process by coming, yeah, to the temple, having a darshan of the deities, yeah, and seeing, then you
but
are
in other words, you don't have to be ashamed that thought came to you. It's okay. I mean, it may not, see, we are not pure and perfect, but our goal is to become pure and perfect. We may do mistakes. It's okay. Don't judge. Don't be a judge of your own self saying, oh, I did that mistake, I'm going to punish myself. Let punishment be the department of somebody else, okay? Like, we don't treat ourselves, we don't check ourselves. We have other people doing that for us. Similarly here also. Our duty is to conduct devotional service, execute devotional service, be a part of the service, but not to judge ourselves saying how pure we have become, and that's not our... We can't do that really. Constitutionally also, we can't execute it correctly.
Prabhuji, I just want to make a comment. There was a blind man. He cannot see, both of his eyes is blind. He go to the temple regular basis. And people in the street, even people in the temple, they think that is funny. And they ask him one time, why you are going there? You cannot see anything. And he said, I know I cannot see, I'm blind. But I'm sure Bhagavan seeing me sometimes.
Yes.
So that look, I get it. That is important thing for me.
Yes.
I think that is what is the important thing.
Yeah. We read a similar pastime that Sri Saraswati Thakur was not having his glasses while taking darshan, and somebody did the mistake of suggesting him that maybe he can see better if he had glasses. Actually, not a mistake, because of which we get a lesson now. That, but somebody was sacrificed on that altar. I thought that was an important lesson, because not that I claim that I've understood it, but I wanted to share these teachings because Bhaktivikas Maharaj has also undergone through a lot of rigorous research in compiling these teachings and presenting this book. So it's an important lesson, otherwise he wouldn't have gone through the trouble of compiling it and sharing for the benefit of this, of the devotee community. So, we really have to understand that, you know, mistakes will happen. I mean, but don't be so, strict that we judge our own selves. That's not our part. Does he say judging in that verse 247? Judging is not mentioned, right? Only thing mentioned is activity. So, yeah, we will fall, we will trip, we will, you know, do things wrongly, rightly, but with the right intention, we will get there. That's the whole point. So be gentle on your own self and not be overly strict and judging one's own self. That's not our... Does that mean that we act without character? Then no. There has to be fine balance. There has to be an honesty driving our actions. That's all.
Just going to say that we had a similar comment in our chat group discussion in the morning today, where we were talking about that the general tendency is that we should always be saying, I'm like, you know, I'm the most fallen and I'm less than the other person around. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about that in the morning, that at some point in time we also need to kind of check our own progress, because if you're constantly thinking that I'm the lowest of the lowest, then it's not a good place to be.
May be thinking of the magnitude of lowness, but it still stands centered on I. That's a problem, right? still centered on I, saying, I am the lowest, I am the highest, I am the humblest, I am the strongest. Whatever the I, you're still focused on I, me and mine. That, so these are things to not be considered. It'll come. Humility will come. The pridelessness, fear, you know, freedom from anger and lust and all will come. It's not that we judge ourselves and say, oh, I'm now 20% freed from anger, 30% freed from lust, and I'm totally free from pride. That is not our jurisdiction. We don't even need to talk about those things.
Is our duty is to review?
Yes.
Is because we have a right to do our prescribed duty. Is prescribed duty is to review our progress.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? I mean, can we take that as?
Because no, you introspect, but not that you grade yourself. Okay. By reviewing, you can introspect. Yes, you have to be introspective and list out that where have you violated, where can you do better. But not in terms of, I reacted so and so and that person couldn't, so I'm more humbler than him. That's not a process of review. And then coming out with a judgment that I am most fallen of all and this and that. That's not born out of true humility. That is born out of a competitive kind of a thing, saying, I want to prove that I am the most fallen. So that's not... See, those things don't need to be endeavored for. It'll come. It'll come. We just have to execute the process and those milestones will be achieved. Not that we artificially claim that we are those things. So those are not even to be talked about. What's the point? And that's my personal standpoint. It's not a... recommended thing or anything. Different people lack differently, so. But you have to sense whether the center of the description is I or the character, the quality. Whether they are talking about humility or are they talking about themselves. That's the distinction to be made. Can I request all the people to move a little forward?
Same point, like even materialistic people, like sometimes, like they talk this concept as inferior complex. I'm so fallen. Some people are depressed by this concept. This also, but devotees also do the same thing. When devotees mentioning, like we do inferior, means we are glorifying Krishna. In that context, like we are low means you are keeping Krishna as higher.
Yeah.
So that way. We are different from them. We always say we are inferior because we are telling Krishna is superior. But they don't know what is Krishna, so they are always inferior, so that's when they are depressed.
Okay, thank you all. Hare Krishna.